Hello and welcome to a new edition of Capitol Notes, our weekly look at California politics and public policy for the week ending December 12th. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, was, thinking about taking a sip of the tea before I said your name?
I was, like, humidifying with it. It's so hot.
Oh. Well, it's soothing.
It's too hot to soothe.
But it's cold outside. It's perfect for you.
It's not that cold.
Last week you said that you had were trying to break the coffee habit. Is this like an example of how you're trying to drink something else?
How am I doing?
Apparently you're doing pretty well.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't going to say it myself. That's
very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, we're back here talking about apparently the ongoing saga that we talk about every week. You could probably just
caffeine consumption.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We could queue up every podcast and talk about Anthony's caffeine and the state budget mess. Before we talk about the budget mess, I should say that we had a listener send us an email about last week's podcast about something we talked about. Now, last week we talked about the governor's effort to deal with the car tax back in 2005 and his Count Cartaxula, which was one of the weirdest PR stunts.
And it never did turn into a breakfast cereal.
And it never did.
So disappointing.
It was perfect for Count Chocula, Count Cartaxula. Anyway, and so we said that it's like no photo that exists of that infamous event in Southern California, and a listener proved us wrong.
Yes, thank goodness.
Now the photo, unfortunately, is not very clear. Like, you can see Count Cartaxula
off in the corner
of the stage with the governor.
I think he's doing the monster mash. I think he actually is.
And as we know, that was a longtime friend of the governor who was dressed up as Count Cartaxula.
Yes, I think this was the high point of the Schwarzenegger governorship, was it not?
It's all been downhill since then. Although the people in the governor's office will hear that and, you know... Well, actually, maybe they'll agree, given what's going on with the budget. But anyway.
Ooh, segue.
Thanks to our listener for finding Count Cartaxula on the internet.
Yes.
Maybe I'll put the photo up or something.
Yeah, you should put the link up.
Yeah, I'll put the link up so people can see it. Okay. back to the pain and suffering of the budget. Speaking of that being the high water mark, right? And so now everything is just...
Speaking of things that rise again.
What? Budget deficits? Nice.
Vampire?
Good.
Yeah.
Good segue.
Okay.
So, new numbers at the end of the week from the governor's administration are going to peg the deficit at around 40
billion. Cue the Dr. Evil Pinky.
Oh, yeah, right. You want to do it?
No.
You're not going to do the impression?
You're doing the number.
$40
billion?
Million dollars? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it.
Billion. It's 40.
I've got a good friend who actually does the Dr. Evil thing better. Maybe I should have brought him in. Anyway, $40 billion is the ballpark figure for the current problem of the budget. And I think that number is interesting because this is one of the first attempts, it appears, by the governor's folks to not only examine the lack of revenue, but the increases in expenses. I mean, this numbers, we're told, mixes the revenue problem from the economy and the increasing expenses that I guess is somehow exacerbated by the economic conditions of people's lives being all screwed up and their wallets being screwed up.
And it's more than that. I think it's the beginning of the governor turning up the heat. You know, the governor
You think the number is out there to make a point?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it's not real.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it is a worst case scenario number, and it might grow. You know, if the property tax forecasts are, if the revenues come in as dire as some of the forecasts,
right.
But $40 billion assumes that the governor's lottery bond proposal does not pass this year. There's no action on the budget before next year's budget is approved. So it presumes complete inactivity from the legislature, which, given what we've seen from the legislature over the last 6 months, is not an unreasonable assumption.
Well, and what we've seen over the last few days, let's talk about what happened this week. On Monday this week, we had a completely unprecedented joint convention of the Assembly and the Senate to talk about the fiscal crisis. I mean, they don't get together and do one session unless it's the State of the State or some visiting dignitary. And so this was really unusual. And they sat there and they had presentations from the State Treasurer, Bill Lockyer, the State Controller, John Chung, the Legislative Analyst, Mac Taylor, and the Governor's Budget Director, Mike Genest, who painted a pretty grim scenario. The way I kept thinking about watching it Monday was it was a drug intervention.
Yeah,
it was like, you know, where you're sitting down, you're locking the doors, you're looking at the person and saying, you've got to change. Now, the sad part of that was that once the presentation was over, to further my drug intervention analogy, it was almost as though the person who was being scared straight picked up the crack pipe and went back to their merry life, because everyone it didn't
ran
seem,
back to their corners.
It didn't seem like it didn't seem like the legislature heard it or wanted to hear it or thought anything of it. I think Republicans largely thought the entire thing was designed to put them on the spot about raising taxes, and that seemed to be what all of their question and answers came across as thinking that's what it was about. I mean, they were all staged questions from Democrats and Republicans.
Well, but who's going to get them off that mark? I mean, who is the leader of the Republican Party now? It's arguably not Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, what does Steve Poizner think of the budget? Should we be raising taxes? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it takes to get the message through. You know, the governor's office, I think, has sort of gone on the offensive this week. They've been more aggressive in reaching out to reporters and calling press conferences, which we'll talk about later on in the week. Or later on in the podcast, and I lost my train of thought. it's the caffeine.
It's or lack thereof.
Right. But you know, I think that they are trying to drive the message home. But they're frustrated. It's not only with Republicans. They're frustrated with the Democrats as well. There's a sense that the cut proposal that was put on the table at the end of November before. The lame duck session ended. There was a sense that those were not real cuts, for lack of a better phrase.
There was a sense among legislative Republicans mainly of that.
I think the governor's office shares that. And that
you don't think the governor would have signed that deal had it been sent to his desk?
No. I mean, the governor's office has told me.
I know they've said that, but I wonder if the pressure had been put on him. But that's another story.
It's a hypothetical that is so far from mattering that we should explore it further.
Right.
But
we'll put that in the Count Cartaxula file for what ifs.
The ever growing, you know, and it just seems like we're back in the sort of shallow political calculus and hurt feelings department here, where the governor held a press conference yesterday, rolling out a deficit clock. He did say the Republicans sometimes come to budget negotiations not prepared.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. So he when he rolled out the press conference, he said the current year budget problem is $14.8 billion now.
Right.
That's up from his estimate of $11.2 at the beginning of November.
And it was up from the estimate of his own finance director, I believe, Tuesday, who told us that if there was no action on the budget this year, it would go to $13 billion, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of numbers out there. Right. A lot of numbers out there. So about $15 billion in the current budget year, 14.8. Right. And and as Anthony just alluded to at this press conference, the governor rolled out this large deficit clock, which this governor has certainly liked the props in his time in office. And there have been props that were worse than this one. I mean,
Count Cartaxula,
but the spigot of red ink back in 2005.
The line and the redistricting.
The line and the redistricting press conference. It wasn't really the line for the district. But this one, I mean, it made a point. It was a prop, let's admit it, for television cameras and newspaper photographers, but it made a point. It had the number of days that the legislature hasn't acted on what the governor wanted him to do, and a ticking clock that apparently ticks off $470 every second that the state's financial problem gets worse, and showing, you know, that this is a problem, and he said he's going to put it out in front of his office in the hallway in the Capitol, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But as you just alluded to, one of the things that was talked about in this press conference, he was asked about Republicans and Republican demands for a budget, which we need to talk about in a moment in detail. And the governor said that I think he took a pretty good whack at legislative Republicans in his comments, where he said that those demands haven't come up in meetings and that Republicans have been a little vague. And we might as well play what the governor said exactly here so we can get a feel for it.
I think that what is important is to come to the meeting and to be prepared and to propose those kind of issues. I've been to many meetings. None of those things were discussed. So, I mean, you know, I think it's very hard for the Democrats, in a way, to negotiate when no one puts that on the table and says, here is the list of things that we ask for, and if we have this list, then we're willing to increase taxes and to come up with extra revenues. But it's always very vague and nothing specific, and I think that makes it sometimes frustrating in those negotiations.
So, obviously, the governor really, I think, He took a pretty good shot at Republicans there. And that whole thing that they haven't been prepared, that they've been vague, you know, there's a Big Five meeting here at the end of the week. You got to love to be a fly on the wall for that to see what Republicans think, because I think they were pretty ticked off.
I mean, you don't need to be a fly on the wall. I think people, they're talking about it pretty openly, and there were statements from the two Republican leaders in the legislature, swinging back at the governor. But that's what I mean, is that we still seem to be in this sort of hurt feelings and stage of the negotiations, which is frustrating to people who think that there is a real problem. I mean, the clock thing, it is a prop. And, we took shots at the governor for giving his history of props in the roundup this morning. But at the same time, I think it is, like I alluded to before, the beginning of the governor's office turning up the heat and really making this a campaign to the people of California. You know, I mean, that is something that this governor still has the ability to do better than most governors, certainly better than any other politician in the state, to put it into language that the people understand, that, you know, the cost of this legislative paralysis.
Well, and I mean, you know, these are well-known strategies in politics, but the carrot and stick strategy probably is what the governor would need to do then, because, I mean, you can have the stick out there in public and whacking at the legislature and saying they're ineffective and doing all the things he's done in the past and maybe doing more of what he's done in the past when he's been critical of the legislature. But inside the Capitol, he's got to find a way to make inroads to these people. That came up in the press conference as well.
Who brought that up?
I asked him that because I just had to ask him that. But we've all talked about it, that he doesn't like Big Five negotiations with the legislative leaders because he's said in the past he doesn't think anything ever gets accomplished in them. We've also talked about, as we talked about last week on the podcast, his lack of a relationship with rank and file members of the legislature on both sides of the aisle.
So you can't do it both ways. If you're frustrated going through the leadership and you've reached an impasse with the leadership, I mean, the governor only needs three Republicans in the Assembly to vote for a budget proposal and two Republicans in the Senate. I mean, it doesn't seem – I know it's a last resort. They don't like to do the pickoff strategy, but it doesn't seem – it seems like there's some middle ground there where they can at least begin developing personal relationships with some of these new lawmakers. I mean – look, the governor's a star. He's personable. He has a lot of charm. And it's a weapon in his political arsenal that he just doesn't seem to use very effectively.
Well, and so let's play a clip of that as well, because so the governor seemed to indicate that, yes, that's what he needs to do.
I don't like the Big Five meetings because for me, they have never produced much. But I do them because I would do anything in order to move the agenda forward and in order to come to some kind of a compromise so we solve this budget crisis. I also meet individually with the legislative leaders, so you know, and we will also now, since they are more and more coming to town, I will meet them also individually, the legislators. I want to reach out to all of them and explain to them how important this is to solve this crisis and how we all have to work together, Democrats and Republicans. So I would do anything and everything.
And I think it does go to the point of what you're saying, which is he has that ability to do that. He has more of an ability to do that than other governors have. The charisma he has just – and new legislators have got to be people who still see Arnold Schwarzenegger a little more as Arnold Schwarzenegger because, I mean, they haven't been around the building for several years and said, oh, yeah.
Right. Depending on how deep they've been and how closely they've been involved with the Republican Party establishment in their local district. Mm-hmm. But part of this is the governor's own fault. I mean, there have been moderates in the legislature early on, like Abel Maldonado, who a state senator from Santa Maria through Monterey.
Central Coast.
Who has voted for budgets and who has openly supported the governor. And Maldonado ran for state controller in a Republican primary against a more conservative Republican, now his new colleague, Tony Strickland.
Wonder what they have to talk about.
Plenty, I'm sure. And there was a sense, I know from Maldonado, that the governor sort of hung him out to dry. The governor did not support him. So there was no political benefit to supporting this governor in a potentially costly vote. So, part of this problem, this lack of trust and the lack of personal relationships, I think is rooted in some pretty recent history. And it's something that the governor has to overcome.
I think it's interesting, though, because, I mean, you know, the difficulty is that, I mean, this goes to where the governor stands politically. He is more moderate than a lot of rank-and-file members of his Republican Party in California. And if you go back and look at that primary, I mean, I'm sure there was a political calculation that the governor himself was up for re-election.
Right.
Yeah, well, the governor was up for re-election himself in 2006 right. when that was happening, and that he needed to mollify the conservative base of his party at the time. And I think, you know, the ongoing dynamic that you're talking about that I'm going to hone in on for a moment is this dynamic of rewarding moderates and not rewarding moderates
right.
On both sides of the aisle, because I mean the governor comes off as a moderate, as a pragmatist, and
right.
so where are the rewards for those people? I mean, this is not the same example, but let's give another one. When the governor campaigned in a couple of legislative districts back in 2004, you know, trying to get Republicans elected. One of the ironies is that he campaigned against a Democrat named Mike Machado, who was
right.
a state senator in the Central Valley, who turns out to be a pretty moderate Democrat. He's now termed out and turned out to be one of the governor's better friends on issues like water and things that the governor wanted to push forward. The governor went into that district to try to elect a more conservative Republican, I think, to mollify the Republican
sure.
Party.
Sure.
But it goes to show how that pragmatism has had to take a backseat to politics so many
right.
times. And now when he needs the pragmatism and he needs those people, where's that relationship?
And it's the dilemma of somebody who espouses, you know, and articulates post-partisan ideals in a very partisan environment and, frankly, doesn't have a good strategy about how to navigate it. I mean,
in other words,
post-partisanship
as a
vague term
yeah.
is meaningless.
Well, I was going to say, in other words, when you're a party of one, you're really a party of one.
Yeah. You know, these are not problems that are inconceivable. I mean, or not insurmountable. Insurmountable.
I think it is
the caffeine.
I'm going to say go back to the coffee.
Okay, great. I'll tell my doctor.
But these are not insurmountable problems.
Right, but they take some thinking and some plotting and some planning and some really good political strategy.
Hmm. The other thing that we heard about with the dire financial situation on Monday in the joint convention, we had Controller John Chung remind everyone that the state's going to run out of cash in February and March because mm-hmm. of the enormous strains.
He now says
on
February.
Yeah.
February
is the first bad month. Yep. March is a really bad month, according to his data. Because of the strains on just the state's cash flow issues. And then the other part that got a lot of news, and we'll be watching next week, obviously, is State Treasurer Bill Lockyer saying that effectively, as of next week, he's going to attempt to pull the plug on financing infrastructure construction projects in the state. Now, the arcane way that this works, without getting too far into it, is the state fronts money for these projects that are in the pipeline, that are ready to go, highways, roads, bridges, et cetera. And, of course, those things are ultimately financed by bonds. But before you go to market and ask Wall Street investors to buy the bonds, the state usually gets the project going.
Right.
But that comes out of the state's general operating fund and the state's pool of all of its different money. And the treasurer's point is that there are, again, too many pressures on that money right now to pay the regular bills, and we cannot front those projects' money. And so he's prepared to pull the plug. Now, he and Controller Chung and the governor's budget director sit on this committee that has to formally make the decision next week. But I think the writing's on the wall. They're going to suspend giving money to those projects. And as the treasurer said, talk about the economic stimulus we want out of infrastructure projects. Talk about it, you know, talk about needing it. It's going to go away because we don't have the money.
Right. I mean, and you know, there are dueling forces here where you look at what's going on nationally. I know we've talked about this before, and even here in the state where we're searching for ways to stimulate the economy while getting an immediate injection of cash into the state coffers. I mean, those are oppositional forces. I mean, the way you get money in is by essentially taxing people, for lack of a better term, and that tends to slow down the economy. That you know takes away their ability. Every dollar they're spending on government, as a governor, they're not spending on goods and services that get the economy going. So, you know, these are tough waters to navigate. Certainly.
Hmm. You know, and I want to just was going to mention just something else that didn't get really talked about much, but I found it interesting in Bill Lockyer's presentation to the legislature. Let's all remember, for those of you who don't remember, that Bill Lockyer was a longtime member of the California legislature and, you
leader
know,
of the state Senate.
Leader of the state Senate and really has a background as a legislator, you know, before he became a statewide elected official as attorney general and then as treasurer and always possibly one day as governor, as he always, you know, thought about. But Lockyer made a very interesting statement at the end of his presentation on Monday, and he said, and I think this is really the crux of the issue about where the legislature goes. He said, all of you have to decide, are you going to be a thermometer or a thermostat? Is your job to basically take the temperature of your constituents and reflect exactly what you think they want? Or are you going to operate independently to set policies based on what we need, the thermostat model of, you know, I've got to regulate what's going on? That is the difficult dynamic in the legislature right now. Who's in charge? Who do they represent? What model of being a legislator does each member use?
Well, and frankly, who has the experience and the seasoning and the comfort level with their own constituents and with their own grasp of state policy and the grasp of the issues to be that person? I mean, I do think that the experience issue is huge. I mean, there's such a steep learning curve. And, you know, I think we're seeing some of what is lost because of term limits. I mean, not exclusively. Term limits is not the only factor. And I'm, you know, not even saying term limits was a bad idea in 1990. But it is, it's one of the consequences. And some people would argue that it's worth it and that it doesn't matter. And other people would argue that it's destroyed the way California government works.
Hmm. We alluded to earlier in the podcast the proposals that Republicans say they want to have considered in the middle of this budget debate. I think, of course, the question is, are these demands that they have to have before they'll vote for taxes? As the governor said, he doesn't think that's the case. He thinks that Republicans want these and then they'll consider taxes, which he said wasn't a negotiation. But the list is relatively long. Most of them have been talked about for a while, so I'm not going to go over the whole list. But they are things like overtime regulations for business that, you know, you don't have to pay overtime after 8 hours. Perhaps that would be what they want if somebody worked four 10-hour days.
Right.
More flexibility for businesses. More flexibility about implementing the Americans with Disabilities Act. Right. You know, all the different kind of changes you have to have to a business to be ADA compliant for the disabled. And one of the things they want to talk about is up this week in the news, and I think it's very difficult timing for this issue, and it's a difficult dance for the governor as well.
Doesn't
on this.
Doesn't matter. Dance my foot. This is a steamroller.
Yeah, is AB 32, the Global Warming Solutions Act that the governor signed into law 2 years ago. The State Air Resources Board, as Anthony and I even speak a few blocks away, is poised to begin the full implementation of AB 32 and to set the ball rolling. And the requirements about greenhouse gas reductions, everything kind of starts with a big push from the Air Board and their expected vote here on Thursday.
Right. And it's not just the implementation of AB 32, but it's also the adoption of new regulations involving diesel trucks, which is separate from AB 32, but also similarly is going to put a burden on businesses that they'll effectively have to replace their trucks to make them more
separate on the goal, but not separate when the critics say it's unaffordable.
Yeah, it's essentially more cost. It all boils down to more cost for business who have to pay for helping to clean up the environment. And this is, you know, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, on AB 32 and other regulations like it, where, you know, it's not free to clean up our environment. And it is a balance that politicians all have to strike about how to, you know, not unduly burden businesses while still trying to clean up our air and our water and our environment. And the governor himself this week was asked about whether, given the economic situation, whether or not the Air Resources Board should slow down its implementation of AB 32. And
which is what Republicans have been wanting.
Right, which is on this ask list that you're referring to. And the governor said absolutely not. He said he was willing to even said in the press conference that he was willing to talk about other concessions except for the environmental concessions. That is something that is important to the governor's global brand as a politician and his global marketing, and is, I think, close to his heart politically, and apparently is non-negotiable.
And on the AB 32 front, hasn't got a tremendous amount of media attention, a few places here, there, everything. But it is worth noting that the Legislative Analyst Office, which we as reporters often turn to as a good source of nonpartisan research, took a look at the AB 32 plan and its what the Air Board had estimated about the economic impact, both pro and con. Right. And they did so at the behest of
Roger Nilo.
Yeah, Roger Nilo, Republican in the Assembly. And the analysis is pretty ugly, I think, from the Air Board's thing. It basically says that the Air Board's analysis of the economic impact is incomplete, and that it doesn't take into enough effects, it doesn't take into account enough of the different kinds of impacts out there, and frankly, that the economic impacts could be much worse in the short term than people are talking about, because the real question is, this is a long-term policy that the state of California is putting in place. And when you look years and years and years down the road, maybe it will have an economic benefit in terms of the way that
it changes
the
economy. When new industries get up and running and a green industry forms.
But the question is, in the short run, what will it do to the economy? And the LAO's analysis seemed to indicate that there are some real concerns that the short term could be pretty bad.
Right, and this is something that John Howard wrote about in our paper last week.
You guys picked it up.
It's a huge concern. If you talk to business groups and truckers and other groups that will be affected by AB 32 or these other regulations, they just say that the Air Resources Board has an agenda that is moving forward regardless of the economic impact it'll have on the state, and that they don't care about the economy. They care about cleaning up the environment.
It
does put the governor in a tough spot as he, you know, tries to make himself both pro-business and pro-environment. And not always, but sometimes these things, you know, do come into conflict.
Yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't give a equal shout out to our Climate Watch reporter at KQED, Craig Miller, who's doing a piece on the California Report that airs on Friday when this podcast comes out about the LAO analysis as well. Because it's a very interesting in this economic time. It's a very interesting question about what that impact is going to be. I mean, you know, we all want the greater good, but how do you get to the greater good?
Right.
I think is what comes out of it.
And at what price?
Right.
You know, and is the environment something that is now a make or break issue for people? Or is it something that, given the economic realities, they're willing to sacrifice or at least make some compromises on in the name of economic stability?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny as we wrap up this podcast. I mean, December is normally the quiet month here. You know, the legislature convenes, a few bills are put across the desk. We start looking at the budget a little bit. But, I mean, this month of December is just unlike any other, I've ever seen and anybody I've talked to has ever seen around here.
Yeah. And it just, it just shows that we didn't solve anything when we passed the budget in September. I mean, we all knew it was a sham then. And that the problem was getting worse. And since then, the bottom has fallen out of the economy and nothing has happened. So this process of nothing happening has been very busy.
Yeah. Let's hope we're not here on Hanukkah and Christmas and New Year's. You'll be here.
I'll be here.
You never leave.
Till the last dog dies.
Of course, if you don't have some coffee, I think that's going to be a problem for you.
I might be asleep, but I'll be here.
I'm going to ask you. And how would that change anything?
Exactly. What would I miss?
Why would I harass him? For Anthony York at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.